Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
It is only a paper moon hanging over a cardboard sea. I bet it wouldn't be make believe it for you, believe in me. It is only a canvas sky sailing over a muslin tree. I bet it wouldn't be make believe it for you, believe in me. Without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played on a penny arcade. It's the Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. Nobody wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me.
I'm Glenn Mobrick, and today on Route 51, it's not only a paper moon, it is a world of paper as we explore a new exhibit at the Lee Auchie Woodson Art Museum in Wausau called Folding Paper, The Infinite Possibilities of Origami. The exhibit comprises more than 100 works by 40 artists from 13 countries and traces origami's history from its Oriental origins to classroom craft to sophisticated art form and to its impact today on technology, design, science, math, and the global peace movement. Joining us in our Wisconsin Public Radio studio in Wausau, we are honored to have my fellow Wisconsin Public Radio host, Ruth Ann Vestman, who not only hosts our outreach and classical music programs, she's also an accomplished origami artist. Ruth Ann has studied with some of the world's leading paper folders, and her work has been featured in newspapers, magazines, and national television programs. She won an award for her greeting cards at the Origami World Exposition in Japan. And joining us by telephone from Chicago Academy High School, Christine Edison, an origami artist and teacher who uses the discipline to give her students a hands-on experience with the concepts of algebra and geometry, and who has explored the links between origami and technology and science. Now, this is a fascinating topic. We'd love to hear from you, so give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. Ruth Ann and Christine, thanks so much for being with us today.
Great to be here with you. Thank you.
Same.
Ruth Ann, let's start with you. I'm going to get some background on both of you ladies so that our Wisconsin Public Radio audience know who we're talking to. Ruth Ann, you've been with Wisconsin Public Radio since 1988. Is
That's
that true?
True.
And you started as a producer for Michael Feldman's What Do You Know show. What was that like?
I'd like to say it was one of my favorite jobs I've ever had because I really loved producing the program and going on the road with the show and meeting many people who really not only enjoy the show but public radio. So
well,
it was great.
I'm not going to ask you what Michael Feldman is really like, but I will ask you what roles you're filling for Wisconsin Public Radio today.
Today, I am the host of Classics by Request, which is every Saturday morning beginning at 10. And then I also produce outreach programs for the station, including the Neil Silva Young Artist Competition.
Wonderful. And you're a musician.
I am. I used to play the harp. I have a degree in music and a minor in art.
What got you interested in origami, and how long have you been doing it?
Origami. Well, I think like everybody, we all were introduced to some form of origami when we were young and in school. And, of course, the fortune teller, the paper airplane, a folded fan, those are my first recollections. And when I was about 10 or 11, I received my first origami kit, was able to fold the simple folds, but I'll tell you, the crane, I was stumped. I didn't know how to read and understand the diagrams until 20 years later when I was reintroduced to the art. I returned home. I'd been in Israel performing the harp, and I came back home to Wisconsin and with my parents, and then I noticed as I was around, not knowing what if I wanted to continue with music or not, I was in my room, and I looked up there with things I still had in the home there, and there was this origami kit that I still had. And it was collecting dust, and I brought it down because I wanted to see if I could figure it out, and also I had a dog that was dying of cancer, and I wasn't willing to give up yet the family dog. So I started folding, figured out the crane, and at the same time we befriended a gentleman from Japan who, before he went back, saw that I was folding the crane, and he happened to have a small little book of origami. And he gave it to me, and then going through the book, I realized, wow, these are not just two-dimensional forms. These
right.
are 3D. So I was beginning to teach myself as my dog was there. Well, of course, later on, my dog died, but it was the therapy that really helped me. By folding the paper, it was so therapeutic, and it meant something to me, and I just had to know more. So I was just lucky by a series of events that I was going back to New York where I had started a master's and I still had an apartment out there and found out that there was a national organization of origami and I just happened to call them up, and Alice Gray, one of the founders of the organization, said, come on over. And I met her and another founder, Michael Schell, and they took me under their wing and met Lillian Oppenheimer, who really started the movement in the United States in 1958. And they were so generous.
You know, most people don't think there's such a thing as an origami movement.
But there is, and it's just amazing. But I have to say their guidance and support and generosity in showing me and bringing me into, shall I say, the fold or the family of the origami paper folders in the city and teaching me their techniques of teaching and just folding. They introduced me to a whole new world of friends, and I must say it is a world of friends, and it's I haven't looked back ever since.
Tell me about those greeting cards that won that award for you at the Origami World Exposition in Japan.
Well, I used traditional folds and used them with designing certain, the front of the greeting card, and just in my own way of designing it, and that's what... I used the crane and I used other simple folds, but it's just the artistic way that I put it together, which is why they honored me in such a way.
Wonderful. And what do you think of the new exhibit at the Woodson Museum? The two of us had a chance to walk through it today.
Wasn't it incredible?
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
I knew nothing about this until yesterday, and I feel like I'm taking a crash college course. And walking through the Woodson Museum and seeing what's possible with just a single piece of paper, the kind of artistic creations you can make out of that, and then the scientific and mathematic applications and implications.
Yes.
I was just amazed.
And without cutting or gluing. That's the other part, the single sheet of paper. It is. It's just amazing, the technical aspect of it and what different folders are doing to the process of folding that piece of paper, what they're bringing to it, their backgrounds. It is.
Well, you're going to be at an event this Saturday at the Woodson Museum, which incidentally is on Wausau's east side, the corner of Franklin and 12th Streets, way up at the top of the big hill. It's called the Origami Foldout. Tell me what you're going to be doing.
We're going to be folding together. That's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be learning simple models and having a great time.
And you're going to be teaching people.
Of all ages.
Regular people how to do origami.
All ages are welcome.
How difficult is that? How tough is it to learn?
To learn? Beginning model, let's think of that in terms of, I'll be folding, they'll be watching me, it's sharing that moment and just paying attention and enjoying the experience. So it's not going to be difficult at all because we'll be learning basic folds.
So the people who go are going to be able to walk out of there with something that
absolutely.
They've created.
Absolutely.
That's noon to 5 at the Woodson Art Museum, the corner of 12th and Franklin in Wausau. Christine Edison, you've got a couple of your pieces on display at the Woodson Museum, and you're not only an origami artist, you're a Chicago Public High School math teacher. So how did that happen?
About a decade ago, I was teaching actually at a small private school, and I was told I had it was $10 or $15 for supplies for the entire year. I needed to have a club for once a week. And everything you would think of that would cost pretty much nothing was taken. Acting was taken and drawing was taken. And I remembered I had seen a book at my mom's place of origami. I'm thinking paper's cheap. I figured I could buy some reams of paper.
And there was nothing in the budget for something more expensive?
Recycle paper.
Nothing in the budget for something more expensive for that extracurricular class you had to teach?
The school that I taught at, the teacher's pay was about $13,000, so there really wasn't a lot of room for extra budget.
So it was through necessity that you got introduced to the world of origami.
Absolutely, yeah. It was... There wasn't really a heck of a lot of extra money with that that income level.
Well, now you're teaching at the Chicago Academy High School, which, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a public school in the Austin neighborhood?
Mm-hmm. Belmont, Austin neighborhood, yes.
What is that like? What's a typical day like for you?
Well, we have what are considered block schedules. So depending on the day, on a Wednesday, say I would go and I'd have... 90-minute blocks. I teach every one of them. They're straight algebra 2s with trigonometry. And then we have something called flex, which is functionally like a structured study hall. And after that, we may have a meeting, or depending on the day, I have after-school tutoring. And those are straight days. And basically for kids, If it is my geometry class, which is where I do more hands-on, and in the past especially, when I've taught more geometry classes, I've done a lot more hands-on, is you introduce a topic and then you try and have something where they can actually develop some of the ideas on their own to find the connections with the paper in front of them so that they can actually use it as a manipulative to see instead of just having a teacher yap at them.
Well, how is the Chicago Academy High School, how is it like every other public school in Chicago, and how is it different?
It's different in the sense that we are a teaching training school, so that we take individuals who want to become teachers, and there's a residency program. So while we are all regular teachers, some teachers will have what are basically, you can think of it as student teachers, but for an entire year, it's called a residency program. And their goal is for each of these individuals to go into any of the takeover schools, in other words, schools that have been closed down because of low performance, and so that they can go and work with some of our most disadvantaged kids. It's representative in the sense that it's you know, 90% low income. It's predominantly minority. It is pretty reflective of the population.
And with these students, you are using origami, this ancient oriental art, which has all kinds of modern applications, and you're using it in order to teach the concepts of geometry and algebra. How does that work?
Sometimes it's more direct than others. So, especially with, say, algebra, it's something where you can have them construct something, but then think of a real-life scenario with regards to how much would it cost to actually develop and build, say, a reef. So you can think of a business model. How can you actually make a profit? Which is, for a lot of our kids actually do want to go into their own line of business. They want to be able to charge. Well, how do you do that? So you can do stuff like that. With regards to geometry, it's a lot more straightforward. If you're doing stuff with regards to just folding in general, you can start seeing that vertical angles indeed are congruent. You can see that you've got supplementary angles do form a straight line. It's a lot easy to see from, like, visual crease patterns. So you can do a lot of that. And sometimes it's not even about within the classroom structure. There are students that I still regularly see that come in and they want to learn more because it's a methods of connection. And especially sometimes with kids who don't necessarily want to verbally communicate, it is a way to construct something and give them an object while they do other things, and you know,
so this is a way to reach challenge students maybe who might have some skills but they might have trouble understanding or communicating abstract concepts like math and equations.
Well, and I think sometimes we forget that math comes out of a very practical place, and a lot of our kids who happen to have IEPs or struggle, I have found in the past, they are really, really great at spatial skills. So they may not be able to solve a one- or a two-step equation, but it is very, very consistently the case that students who, and it's not every child, I'll be blunt, but there are kids who've really never had success, and then you're constructing a dodecahedron with Tom Hull's basic units, and they can put it together when even the top students who've got A's on everything in the class, and they can't put it together. And so you watch these kids who have never had a good day in math class, and they actually are the tutor. They're able to go around, and they're able to help other kids out. And there's pros and cons. I mean, in this case, you've got a kid who is able to experience something unique for the first time. And the first time I saw that, it was quite frankly startling, because I had never, I was at a different school at the time the first time I did this, and this particular project I'm thinking of, and I was at Orr, and I had this kid who was just, I mean, gleeful, and this was not a young man who was happy ever, and he was just so excited to be the best, and it was really a revelation that you could have that little bit of success for them meant so much, because they hadn't had that in any capacity.
So you were actually able to reach students who had trouble with math, and they not only excelled at something that was math-related, but they created something in the classroom that must have been an incredible sense of accomplishment for them.
And I think sometimes we get a lot of away from making stuff very rarely do kids make things anymore. They play a lot of video games. They may see stuff. They may go places and see stuff, but they don't actually make crafts and art and objects, and they don't tend to make stuff like they used to. It's not as much of a hands-on world, a physical hands-on, manual dexterity. You don't see that as much, and I think that they find a satisfaction in it, that it can be very profound.
Well, Christine, it's an amazing double life that you lead, you know, with this teaching experience, and then also looking at a couple of the pieces that you displayed at the Woodson Art Museum. We're going to get into that in more detail with you, but right now I want to go to the phones. We've got David in Ironwood, who's been waiting on the line. David, you're on Route 51 with Christine Edison and Ruth Ann Bestman.
Yeah. I wish my teachers were a little bit more what I call, when I was in fifth and sixth grade, I didn't study origami or whatever, but I used to fold these paper boxes and real elaborate with sliding and round ones and what I call it, and quite elaborate, but my teacher didn't find it, so that's what I call it. But I understand different learning styles. There are kids like, I'm a visual spatial learner, and I do the best when I can actually do it with my hands and stuff. And it really does help a lot of kids and stuff. And hopefully the newer teachers, like instead of the old school teachers, the ones I had in fifth and sixth grade, it's kind of by the book type thing. But, I mean, people should realize that different kids learn in different ways, and there's a whole group of kids that really, having something to do with their hands and stuff, can really help them learn.
Christine?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Christine agrees. Ruth Ann?
Totally. No, it's a wonderful way to learn all kinds of things, the benefits of origami. So I agree with you.
I think it is good for science, for math. And I've met teachers who actually used it in the classroom with regards to English and writing, and like for storytelling and writing that down. Several years ago, I talked to teachers and I wrote up some narratives of success, and it was about origami in the classroom. And there are definitely kids, especially for a lot of people, it brings back fond memories. Even for younger kids, they may have done something. And there's other teachers that have used it in pretty much every discipline. To effectively bring something extra to the classroom.
David, thanks so much for the phone call. If you just joined us, this is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guests are Christine Edison, who is a Chicago Public High School teacher and an origami artist who uses the ancient art of folding paper to help teach her kids about math and science, and also Ruth Ann Bestman, a Wisconsin Public Radio host and an origami artist who is going to be conducting a program this Saturday at the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau, where they have a brand new exhibit on origami. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
I'm going to buy a paper doll that I can call my own. A doll that other fellows cannot steal. I'd rather have a paper doll to call my own than have a big coal miner reel our
own. Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
A fascinating topic that I have just learned a lot about in the last couple of days, origami, the ancient art of paper folding, which has all kinds of incredible applications in science, math, technology, and an exhibit that's opened up at the Woodson Art Museum, which displays a lot of the really amazing work that's being done right now, pushing the boundaries of this old art form. Ruth Ann Bestman, a Wisconsin Public Radio host and origami artist, and Christine Edison, a Chicago Public High School teacher and an origami artist, are our guests. Christine, I want to talk to you about the two exhibits that we saw at the Woodson Museum. There was one Now I've got to get my notes here to make sure that I've got the right name for it. Mother and Child.
Mm-hmm.
And you had two abstract three-dimensional figures that apparently were done with pleating and wet folding. Amazing to see those figures in their complexity and to realize that they were both done out of one sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
How did you create those?
So I guess one thing that fascinates me with paper is I consider it as deconstruction or pulling it up, pulling it apart. And I'm fascinated by the tension that's created when you have successive layers and as I said, pulling it apart. You know, the type of kid who pops off the top of the watch and can't get it back together. And it's sort of the same thing is that when you have these, when you put pleats together, you suddenly have all this freedom to pull them apart. And because you have this constrained space, you have this volume that can expand and it can be given direction. And this the idea of the technique is used by more than a few artists. I know Paul Jackson is famous for a very specific type. Goran Kanjavad is also known for using a different type, but this basic pleating, and then in my case I tend to pleat and pull everything apart or pull it apart to create forms that I particularly want. And I wanted something that would give an essence of a mother and child, but I'm not necessarily literal.
Uh-huh.
When I make stuff, I very rarely am literal when I do origami. I don't make a dog to look like a dog. I'm interested more in sort of the abstraction and the hint of an image than that's just for my personal style than an actual.
We saw a lot of abstract designs, Ruthann, mm-hmm. at the exhibit. And we also saw one I think was by Robert Lang, which had very practical medical implications,
mm-hmm.
used as stents.
Correct.
For people who have suffered strokes and had clogged arteries.
That's correct.
And this was an origami form done in metal, but originally in paper.
That's correct. He used a very old traditional model to be able to get that complex finished product to be able to then be implanted during operation.
And so,
it's
so explain to me how that worked, how the stent works and how that's
Stent is collapsed as it's done in surgery to get it into the place in the body, and then when there's a closed artery, that stent then begins to expand and open up so that it allows the blood to flow. And that's just an amazing feat that he was able to design, and that how they're using origami now and the properties of origami folding to be able to do something like
that. In order
that.
To save lives.
Exactly.
That, you know, it's, folding paper.
Who would have thought?
Right. And the other example, and I think it was Lang who was connected with this,
mm-hmm.
involved a telescope.
Orbiting yes.
The Lawrence telescope. Livermore.
That's correct.
Lawrence Livermore. They were working on a foldable telescope. And it's fascinating. How can you actually have something bigger than the size of a football field that can compress or get into a 4-meter size payload? And how can you make sure that it's actually going to deploy? And Robert Lang is brilliant at the mathematics and practical applications.
So he got this into about a 4-meter square payload? So
I
that
think
could
when they were designing it, that was those were the limitations, and how were you going to make that?
And you got that into space, and then it folds out, and it's as big as a football field, or?
That's what the design is mm-hmm. is intended to go out the size of a football field.
And that's basically the solar
mm-hmm.
power for the telescope. It's got to be big so it can suck in all of that solar power, but it's got to be small so it gets into outer space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all origami.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing,
isn't it?
Ruthann, there were also some exhibits that just really amazed me.
Uh-huh.
A reflected skull by an artist, Herman van Gubergen. Am I pronouncing that correct?
Yes, from Belgium. Yes, he's what he did, and you saw that there, is that he folded a small, what do I want to say, a model, but it looked in one way, but as you're sitting on the mirror, you can see from underneath the picture, the reflection, it takes that shape of a skull.
And that's what struck me, is that a skull is not a symmetrical shape. The top half of the skull looks different from the bottom
half.
That's correct. But somehow, with the folds that he was able to get into this single sheet of paper.
Amazing. Yes. Yes.
With the reflection,
back.
He was able to make the image. We had another exhibit there, a book, one book, the Torah, the second book, the Quran, with figures coming out of both books interacting, apparently hoping to be friends.
That's correct, by Mary Golan, an Israeli artist and teacher. She designed that. No, it's very powerful.
Beautiful piece. And origami has a role in the global peace movement, going back to the bombing of Hiroshima.
Yes, indeed, where many children, when they are first introduced to the crane, they hear about this true story about a young girl who was 12, Sadako Sasaki, who knew about this legend that if one folds 1,000 cranes, a wish will come true. Well, she became very sick with leukemia because of the radiation from the bomb when it was dropped in her city. And her friends were encouraging her to fold 1,000 cranes so that she'll get better. Unfortunately, she became very sick as the days were progressing, and she realized that she would not get better. But she folded, before she died, 645 cranes. And today there is a statue of her holding a crane in Hiroshima. And many children all over the world who know of this story send thousands of cranes there to promote peace. And that's what she changed her wish before she died. Since she knew she couldn't live, she changed that wish to peace. And so that's why this crane, which is so symbolic, now means good luck, long life, and peace.
And you were telling me before that there was some reciprocity involved here, too. The cranes came into New York City after the September 11th attacks.
Yes, they did. Children, again, when they hear of these terrible tragedies, they start folding cranes and sending them off to all kinds of places, including Ground Zero, where there were just thousands of cranes that were sent there.
There were, and Christine, why don't I get your reaction to the fact that this isn't just an art form, a mathematical or a scientifically based art form with implications in those fields, but something that has implications for the global peace movement, too.
Well, Mary actually does a lot of work with students, both students of different religious backgrounds and students who are of differing, like kids who have special needs. She actually is known for that, introducing with kids with ADD and with behavioral problems, cognitive problems, and she actually in Israel teaches origami to these kids, but she also uses origami as a way to bridge the gap between people of different faiths. And she teaches also kids of all different backgrounds in Israel, and I think when you fold something with someone else, it you end up talking a universal language, typically. And because of that, that allows you, I think, when you have something you can be civil and have discourse over and do together, that doesn't necessarily bring up antagonism and negative feelings, and in fact it's going to bring up a good feeling. It allows you to find common ground, and it allows you to meet in a place and in a way that you can communicate outside of those differences, outside of those boundaries that have been set up, sometimes by family, sometimes by country, sometimes by any number of outside situations.
The image of the folded crane and specifically folded cranes connected together, Ruth Ann, that has some very significant meaning.
Well, it is one of the oldest. The crane itself is certainly the symbol of origami. It's universal. People recognize that. And it's also the oldest book that we know in existence, from 1780, somewhere around then, that a Buddhist monk put together the crane and designed different ways of connecting cranes in different shapes and patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all with no cutting, but only slits within the paper that allows one to get different patterns of connected cranes by the beak, tail, and wings. And so, yes, it is very spiritual, and this Buddhist monk also designed them to go along with poetry. So, yes, it does have that meaning.
And those patterns are three-dimensional.
Absolutely. You can unfold that the pattern, and you still have that existing crane or rectangle that you had to start off with.
Now, do you have to be a Buddhist monk to have the patience that it takes to do origami?
Not all. but it's still...
How many hours does it take to fold these intricate designs out of a single sheet of paper? I'll tell you, if I was doing it, I'd get about 4 hours into it, and that paper wouldn't exist anymore. I mean, it would be in confetti up in the air.
Practice, and, practice, practice.
And who said there hasn't been plenty of confetti made? You know, there's been more than a few beautiful paper boulders that were made after something didn't work. It's mm-hmm. not necessarily that the paper is sacred. Sometimes it's about the process, about learning what form you can take with functionally two-dimensional objects. I mean, you're taking something flat and you're making something out of it. And if it happens to be an origami boulder, congratulations. You can see if you can make the basket.
Christine Edison, a Chicago Public High School teacher who uses origami to teach her students the concepts of math and science. Some of her work is on display at the Woodson Art Museum, a new exhibit on origami, which opens to the public on Saturday. Ruth Ann Bessman, Wisconsin Public Radio talk show host, our second guest, is also going to be present at that event in order to show you how to make origami sculptures. And Ruth Ann, you told me that you're going to teach me how to do it?
Absolutely.
All right, I'll tell you what, folks out in radio land, that's something that I'm never supposed to say on the air, but I just said it. Get your paper out. Get a
8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
8.5 by 11.
That's typewriter paper, computer-sized paper, or magazine cover.
When we come back, Ruth Ann is going to try to teach me how to do origami. Good luck with that. And we'll see how you do, too. Help us out and then give us a call and let us know how the project went. It's 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Pretty paper, pretty ribbons of blue. Wrap your presents to your darling from you. Pretty pencils to write I love you. Pretty paper, pretty ribbons of blue.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with Ruth Ann Bessman and Christine Edison, two origami artists who have other vocations. And right now, folks, get those pieces of paper in front of you, because Ruth Ann is going to teach us all how to do an origami project. Ruth Ann?
Ready? All right, everybody, have your piece of paper in front of you. It's 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. We're going to make one of Lillian Oppenheimer's favorite models. She's our founder of Origami USA. She loved teaching the magazine cover box. And I thought this would be a fun way to introduce origami, since everybody has this kind of paper around the house. So what I want you to do is fold the long sides together. So we'll take opposite sides, match up those edges.
This is how you start a paper airplane.
Okay. You remember that, don't you? From way back. Good. So now you have a piece of paper that's kind of folded like a book, right? So let's open it up and just place that, get the crease down well, and then I want you to fold the long sides one at a time to meet the center crease.
Okay. So we are taking each side and folding it in half.
So now we've got center.
We would have a single piece of paper with basically looks like four folds.
No, three folds.
Three folds.
Okay.
Four sections, three folds.
You got it. So you've got the sides folded into the center. Now I want you to unfold those folds and open up the paper. You might want to use your hand to just slide over the creases so it stays open. And now I want you to fold. That was pretty easy, I hope. You've got your three creases. Now let's take the short ends, fold them in half. So meet them.
Okay.
One short end folds up to the top.
Now we're going the other way with this.
That's right. Good crease. Excellent.
So now we've got four folds.
You've got four folds.
But eight sections on
okay.
the paper.
Okay, great. Okay, let's open up the paper.
All right.
And now, as we did with the long sides folding to the center, we're going to do the same now with the short ends fold in to meet the center crease.
So we're going again here. This is very methodical and very geometrical.
And this time, you're going to keep your paper folded.
Okay.
So the short ends should be meeting in the center.
Got it.
Okay. And if you look at your paper while it's flat on the table, you've got four outside corners. No, you're opening up your paper, Glenn. No, I want it folded closed.
Okay,
good. All right, and on the table there.
I was counting. we have six folds
now.
and 16 sections.
Okay, good. All right, so you have it folded, and you've got your outside corners. I want you to take the bottom right corner and bring it up and line it up with that first crease line. You should have three creases in your paper that are up on the top there. So fold that first corner, the right corner, in to meet the first crease line.
Okay.
All right, match it up. Don't go to the center. You're going only to the first crease line.
Got
it. Okay. So you've done one successfully. Let's do the same to the remaining corners.
All right. So now we're doing this on
all outside
corners.
So that when you're done...
And I've got something here that looks like a turtle shell.
All right. Turtle shell or a spaceship that many kids say.
Or an aircraft carrier.
Okay. Good. Okay, now if you look at your paper, you've got your edges that are in the center, all right? I want you to carefully lift up one of those center edges, lift it up as far as it'll go,
okay,
and then over as far as it'll go, and what it does is it locks your corners,
place. Yeah, okay.
And crease it down well.
All right, we're doing that.
Okay, excellent, right, and do the same to the other side.
Now it really looks like a turtle shell.
Now, I really
A hat. It looks like a hat.
Okay, like a hat. And I really believe that origami is magical. Okay. Now, you see, so far, we've got this flat piece of paper. But if you lift up those edges that are in the center, or a little off the center now, if you just straight lift it up, you're going to see a box taking shape. A flimsy one.
Yeah, I've got a
box.
But
a box. Now, to make it a good sturdy box, you want to lift it up in the air now, and from the outside, your outside seams, the sides, I want you to pinch those creases, get them stronger on the outside, and also after you've done the four side seams, I want you to then reinforce the bottom creases of the box around and just pinch along the bottom edges as well, and that should make a sturdy box.
I've got a box here.
You've got a box.
Son of a gun.
There you go.
Yours looks better than mine.
Well, that's your first one. Christine, I bet you knew that model, right?
I figure it's probably some variant on it. It's done.
Good. Well, I hope others succeeded as well.
The joys of the rectangular prism.
Well, we've talked a lot about some of the geometrical figures, but there's incredibly lifelike, realistic figures that are made out of origami as well. That, again, we saw at this new exhibit at the Woodson Art Museum. Ruthann, we saw one of a clown's face that looked exactly like wood, like fine mahogany. It was in that display next to the Velociraptor.
Yes. He was a wonderful sculptor before he started doing origami. And he brought that artistic background to his way of approaching the paper. And he did such beautiful, beautiful work with sculpting the paper, wet folding technique, and came up with some just outstanding models.
And we saw four orange mushrooms, which were done by crumpling the paper.
That's right.
They
look
absolutely real.
Yes. The artist would, as you said, crumple the paper and crumple it. And I think he also, if I recall, because I took a class with him many years ago, that he would also dampen the paper. But he came up with these wonderful lifelike mushrooms and other outstanding forms and shapes that take from just crumpling the paper.
Christine, with the pieces that you did with those curved lines, you had to dampen the paper, correct?
I'm sorry. What did which curve?
Mother and child.
I'm not sure. I know I have two pieces there, but I don't. Was it what color was it?
It white.
A white one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and mother and child.
Oh, the mother and child one. Oh, I was thinking it was a different one because
with the three dimensions, you had a. There's a whole technique, isn't there, where you have to dampen the paper in order to get the curve?
Mm-hmm. Actually, that one, no. That's actually not dampened. That is because of the tension. If you think about when you start layering stuff and folding it, you know how if you fold a towel a lot, it gets really, like, heavy on itself? It's very thick? Well, if you start folding paper and it overlaps, and you do it in multiple directions, what happens is you've got this tension because you've got all these thick, thick layers, and that one's actually pulled apart. That one's not wet folded at all, actually. That is because you take these little creases and you pull them out and you force the curve by pulling the paper apart, and it sort of splays apart. And you do every single one of the pleats and you pull it apart, and it forces the curve.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes you can set the curves with spritzing it and letting it dry, especially that particular type of paper does do well. And on some pieces I have, but the mother and child I do not believe was wet-folded in any capacity.
Well, we saw a couple of exhibits, Ruth Ann, that I think were wet-folded. One was a coat of arms
mm-hmm.
that was pleated
mm-hmm.
all in one piece of mm-hmm. paper. Just a really realistic piece, and then an image of a man with, it looked like a dreadlock beard. I told you he looked like a pharaoh to me. But again, to get that beard and get all of that out of one piece of paper,
it's remarkable.
It
yes.
took wet folding, twist
and
folds.
Sculpting, and exactly, to
and
keep the shape.
And something known as tessellations, which is a word I didn't even know until this morning.
Tessellations, it's its own particular subgroup of origami, and if you were looking, it sounds, I'm thinking of two potential pieces. I do know that Joel Cooper is very famous for origami tessellated masks, and it incorporates tessellations
at its heart. Let's define tessellation mm-hmm. for me. I know the definition now, but I'm sure that 90% of the people who are listening have never heard the word before.
I'm sure I'm going to make some people with math degrees cringe, but the cheap answer is a repetitive pattern, a repetitive geometric pattern. Like you go into your bathroom and you see those little square tiles or those little hexagonal tiles.
Right.
That's a tessellation. And if you ever look at Joel's masks, if you looked at them very carefully, there's tons of tiny, tiny little equilateral triangles, which is the basis for all of his folds and his twists. It's this insanely curved and organic nature imposed onto what is a very geometric pattern. It's all equilateral triangles and twists, and then you force the curves through a whole bunch of little techniques.
So we're looking at repeated patterns which all fit together just snug as a bug in a rug, right?
60 degrees.
They all fit together and they don't overlap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tessellation.
It's blurry. Because once he makes a mask out of it, it's not technically a tessellation, but it's tessellation techniques.
There you go. This is an amazing exhibit, and it's an amazing art form, and it's one that Christine and Ruth Ann, I knew very little bit about until this morning, and I intend to learn much more about it because it's fascinating. Origami, the art of origami, it's a new exhibit at the Woodson Art Museum. Ruth Ann Bestman, who is a Wisconsin Public Radio host, you may have heard her doing the Classics by Request program. She is going to be at the Woodson Art Museum this Saturday from noon to 5 in Wausau, teaching you how to fold paper. And you'll be able to see these amazing exhibits. And we've got Christine Edison, a Chicago Public High School teacher and an origami artist. Her work's on display at the Woodson Museum, and she uses origami in order to teach students, Chicago high school students, some of the abstract concepts behind geometry and algebra. If you'd like to join the conversation on origami. We've only got a few minutes left with Christine Edison and Ruth Ann Bestman, both tied in their own ways to the exhibit at the Woodson Art Museum, which launches on Saturday. Christine and Ruth Ann, some brilliant people involved in origami who are brilliant in other ways. Let's talk about Eric Demain of MIT. He's not only an artist, but he's a mathematician. Christine, you work with him, correct, in a series of lectures?
Well, we both say that working would be an overstatement. We both this summer gave lectures at Stony Brook University. They had at the Simon Center for Computational Geometry and Physics, and he lectured. It was part of a series And he was one of the guest lecturers, and I lectured once one night because I was the artist in residence for the summer there. And he is brilliant, and he combines art with regards to origami. He got the MacArthur Genius Award when he was, I believe, a teenager.
And my understanding is he was the youngest professor ever hired at MIT. He was 20 years old. And in fact, MIT has an extreme origami club for its engineering students.
Yes. MIT has a lot of actually some very, very good designers, some who are still there, but some who have graduated that do designs that are superhuman when you talk about realistic. I mean, a realistic two gentlemen at a podium, a duck. I mean, all sorts of insane things out of a single piece of paper. And a lot of the people within that group create technically and physically beautiful beautiful pieces.
And Christine, you're attracted to the mathematical and the scientific underpinnings of origami. But Ruth Ann, reading a New York Times article from a few years back in which you were mentioned, and this was your quote, "I see myself as a musician interpreting a piece of music written by someone else."
Well, because I come from the artistic background, and since I'm not creating my own models, I like interpreting them through the way that I fold them and the choice of paper and giving my own touch to them. So that's where I come from, as well as enjoying to teach the community with many outreach projects and doing community murals. So for me, it's more with the people and from that approach.
And, you know, we talk about left side and right side brain. Maybe this is an art form that combines both of them.
I think so.
I want to get your reaction. This whole idea of origami being tied into the world peace movement. There was a flower bed made entirely of paper called Folding for Peace in Nagasaki, Japan, mm-hmm. the site of the other atomic bombing. And here's a statement by origami artist Yami Yamauchi. Mm-hmm. "The beauty and simplicity of origami, I believe, celebrates the peace in the world we live in. All origami models, simple or complex, have one thing in common. They are folded from a simple sheet of paper. Like the art of origami symbolizes, I believe that people have one wish in common, peace on earth, which is folded by our hands."
Beautifully said.
Now, I just called up that image as you said that, and it is beautiful.
Christine Edison and Ruth Ann Bestman, were entirely out of time. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. And I want to remind you that Ruth Ann is leading A Flock to Fold, a public origami fold-out session from noon to 5 Saturday at Wausau's Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum for the debut of their new exhibit, Folding Paper, The Infinite Possibilities of Origami. The Woodson Art Museum is located on Wausau's east side at Franklin and 12th Streets. You can find out more at lywam.org. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Special music today by Nat King Cole, the Mills Brothers, Roy Orbison, Marie Osmond, and Traffic. Next week on Route 51, we revisit the issue of mining in Wisconsin's Pinoki Range in a second effort to create a new law governing mining in the state with Republican Senator Tom Tiffany of Hazelhurst, who is playing a major role in writing the new legislation, and Democratic Senator Bob Jauch of Superior, who opposes Tiffany's bill and whose district includes the mine site. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we are heading out of town.